Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Scumbags, this is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne,
and it's me, Ellie, and it is me. I've gone all Shakespearean. It is I, Ellen Gibson.
It is you, Ellen Beatrice Gibson.
It is me, yes.
Thank goodness it's you. I am so pleased that you're on your own podcast.
You're very welcome.
So, Ellie, we are, I'm going to speak for us both. We're delighted that Dr. Anharad Rudkin is back on the sofa. Hello, Dr. Anharad Rudkin.
Hello. Hello, both of these.
To thine be the glory. Now, Anharad, you've got 20 years experience as a clinical psychologist specialising in children and families. What the fuck are you doing on this podcast? Yeah. That doesn't sound relevant at all to our interests.
What the fuck?
Why have we got it back, Ellie?
Also, why would you do that? That sounds hard.
Families, blah, blah, blah.
Why don't you just put a gold cat suit and tell jokes about your fanny like a normal person? What's wrong with you?
Make them laugh, Anharad. They don't need help. Oh, well, no, absolutely thrilled because, like, the last time we saw you was just minutes before we all went into lockdown and we did a fantastic podcast, let me just praise myself, about anxiety and talking to children and we talked about girls and all those sort of things. And then the world shut down.
It did, didn't it? It did. And I remember distinctly being here and just that sense of sort of living in a slightly, you know, liminal world. We were heading into something, but we didn't know what we were heading into, did we?
No.
Thankfully we didn't.
No, I think probably for the best. Yes. Yeah. And did your clinical psychologist skills serve you well in the pandemic? Did you absolutely ace the homeschool? You got very well-balanced, happy children. You just smile through every day.
Oh, yes. No, not at all. I am no teacher. I've realised this. I'm very impatient and I find it very difficult to kind of go at somebody else's pace. So, no, I left that to my husband because he's an air traffic controller. And clearly there were no planes in the sky, so he's far more didactic in general and likes to lecture. So actually he was perfect for a bit.
Just waving table tennis bats at the children. Do your maths now.
Left, right, forward.
Yeah, you've got 30 minutes to land. Go. Yeah.
But you know what was really interesting? At the start, my work got quieter because all those kids that I'd been working with who had felt anxious about going to school, being bullied, doing exams, looking a certain way, acting a certain way, they were suddenly in a bubble. Mm. They didn't have to go out. They didn't have to see anybody. They didn't have to do anything. So actually, anxiety for the anxious kids went really, really, really down.
Oh, you must have been fucking furious. Fuck me. This pandemic's put me out of a job. Bloody hell.
I don't want happiness.
Contentment. What good are secure children to me as a clinical psychologist? This is an absolute disaster.
Oh, put away my money gun. Oh. Thank you. Screw you, Wuhan.
Well, and be careful what you wish for, because then, of course, we go back into relatively normal life. And all of those kids who did have anxiety and then didn't had anxiety again, times a thousand. And then those kids who've never been anxious in their life suddenly were really anxious. Mm. So
you've definitely seen an uptick.
Definitely.
In that. Yeah.
Definitely. But in parents as well as kids. I think that's, we kind of put all of the problem in the child. Oh, my child's not functioning. Mm. Oh, you know, they're worried about this, or they're sad about that, or they're refusing to do that. Whereas actually a lot of it was us as parents just struggling to figure out how to do it ourselves.
Mm. Yeah.
So I think, you know, just healing the child, in inverted commas, I think is only part of the solution.
Mm.
We need to debrief parents as well.
Yeah.
What should you do if you're a parent who you have seen that in your child? And again, perhaps in yourself, maybe, I mean, looking at yourself sounds like a good top tip. But what, because we know that mental health services, again, are under more pressure than ever. Mm. Like, what should we be doing if we're concerned about that?
I think there's massive waiting lists for mental health services. Any private provider probably has a massive waiting list. So suddenly you cannot just access the services you need straight away when you need it. But there's amazing books, there's fantastic websites, there's a lot of online stuff now that you could do in the meantime. I think our confidence as parents has been completely eroded, A, through lockdown, but B, through just a general air of perfection when it comes to parenting, which you both obviously do fantastic work around, in terms of dispelling the myth. It's
well,
not
we are,
about
of course,
being perfect.
Brilliant parents, so we set an absolutely tip top. We model some great behaviours. Yeah,
well,
I'm not going to disagree.
You
gonna
really,
disagree.
Really do. And so I think being able to, so as parents, think, okay, maybe I didn't do that so well, or maybe that wasn't so great, or maybe in lockdown I struggled a bit and I didn't function that well. But it's just being aware of that and then getting support for yourself, and then so that you can then support your child, rather than just putting your child on a waiting list and just getting frustrated for 2 years waiting for services. So I don't want that to sound as harsh as it does, because we've all been through it. But it's just thinking, what can we as parents do now that will help us to help our kids?
Yeah, and maybe not, are you saying not beating yourself up about what you might,
completely,
the fact you might have let them watch your iPad for six hours a day? I'm just fucking an example out of the air.
Six, okay. Yeah, cool.
Exactly. You know, I'm thinking, oh, my child's like this because I messed up in lockdown, or I was too stressed or I didn't do crafts with them, or I didn't, you know, cook wonderful, wholesome meals. It's not about beating yourself up. It's about thinking, okay, what role do I have to play in how my kids are right now? And what can I do to change it?
Yeah.
Some things I just cannot change. Most people were doing the best that they possibly could.
And you haven't necessarily fucked them up forever because you let them watch a lot of Peppa Pig, or they ate frozen pizza every day for a fortnight, or indeed
not.
6 months.
No. Absolutely not.
Good.
Oh, well, this is very, very good.
Now we can all have a deep breath. Now, you mentioned there, Angharad, books. Helen, have you read any excellent books, perhaps about child development or psychology lately?
Do you know what? Funny you should mention that. This book is just in my hand, Ellie, and it's called Split Survival Kit.
Who wrote it? That sounds great.
Dr. Angharad. Sorry.
Dr. Anghara.
Dr.
I love her work.
Do you know who wrote this, Ellie?
Who
Dr. Angharad Rudkin.
Oh, wait a minute. She's sat right here.
Absolutely. She also had some help from Ruth Fitzgerald, who is a child author. So that's very exciting. But the sub heading is 10 Steps for Coping with Your Parents' Separation. What an excellent book, and very relevant to mine and 50% of the population's interests.
Thank you.
Well, really 100%, because separation is not in isolation, as Ellie Gibson is very, very acutely aware, in that either you or your friend will go, or your mum, or your anyone, your cousin.
Or someone you hate, in my case. I know you. Also, I know someone who I hate who went for a separation. But that's a story for another time.
That's after we stop recording. But yeah, no, I think what a fantastic resource. What a fantastic book. But it's not just written for parents, although I have very much enjoyed reading it. But what age group is this book targeted at?
So this book is targeted at roughly 8 to 13 year olds.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of lovely books out there for the little kiddies, you know, Mummy and Daddy Don't Love Each Other Anymore, and some lovely books. And there's some for teenagers, but there was nothing in the middle.
Yeah. Mm. There's nothing like This Is Why Mummy's Keying Daddy's Car, things like that.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Exactly. And the average age, I think, of a child when they go through a divorce is 10.
Yeah.
So of course that's sort of slap bang in the middle of this age group. So we just thought, children are getting really interested in non-fiction in general, and sort of,
oh really,
yeah,
okay,
and it's sort of emotional literary type books. So we just thought, well, let's do it, let's plug that gap, because we don't talk about it until it's too late. So, you know, people only will buy that book when they've been through a divorce or about to go through a divorce. What I'd love is that every parent reads that book.
Mm.
Even if they're beautifully and perfectly happily married, just they've got an idea of, okay, this is the kind of thing, if it happens, that we need to be thinking about with our kids.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, in terms of empathy, like I think so many friends at that age don't have the language, or they don't have the skills in which to support a friend or know what to say. I mean, I know my children are very articulate and talk about the divorce very openly, but that's something that I've encouraged. But then I know other people who I've talked to and friends who don't want the conversations to happen, and they're very, very private. So therefore their children don't, when they're asked, they don't really know what to say, or embarrassed or whatever. And obviously you can say as much or as little as you like. But I think having a toolkit, and it's such a gentle, fun toolkit as well. And it's, and I really like this. It's such a positive spin on every aspect that you cover. Like, what can you gain from divorce? What are the happy things? What, you know, and I think, and you provide so many key words in which they can kind of unpack as well. So anyway, I'm just basically telling you what your book.
Well,
why don't you talk about your book, Harrod? Sorry.
I'm really pleased.
You don't need to buy it now, listen.
I'm really pleased that's what you took out of it, because that's exactly what we wanted. We wanted a book. You know, divorce is a heavy topic. Mm. And most adults, when they sit down with kids to talk about divorce, have a special divorce face, and they do the special divorce talk. And it's very heavy. You know, it's very heavy. So we
wanted... You're saying we should use a different face, maybe?
Well, you could maybe
your cum face, something like that.
Possibly. Let me know how that one goes. So it's about kind of making light of it, not making it, not dismissing the importance of it, but actually this is part of a child's life, and if handled okay, it can just be part of a child's life. It's just one of the journeys that they go through, and so it's about having that lightness and a little bit of humour, but also being deadly serious about the things that we need to be, which is these are the skills that you can develop that will not only set you up for life, but will get you through this phase, this bit of your journey. And it's all based on evidence, so we wanted to make sure it wasn't just like me personally saying, oh, this is how you do it, or Ruth saying, oh, this is what I found, but actually looking at the science and the research and saying these are the kind of things that kids use that can really help them to get through.
Yeah, and it's not just saying this is what you should do, which is, I think a lot of baby books is like your kids should be doing this and that. You saying, look, this is what might happen. Mummy and daddy might be cross, or mummy might say something awful about dad, and dad might behave in a certain way. How do you cope with that?
Yeah.
And know that you're still loved, but this is just a finite time, and it will get better.
Exactly.
And I think that's it. And I think, you know, for parents, you often want to go, oh, I just want everything happy. But life isn't like that. And I think that's what kids need, and I think that's what I initially did in the divorce. I just said to the kids, I just want this to be a happy home, and I gave them too many sweets and had no boundaries because I was not coping. But then, you know, you cope with iPads and sugar, don't you? Because you're like, this is what makes you happy, this is what makes
numb
you
it,
happy.
Numb it,
yeah,
numb it.
Exactly.
Yes.
Hide it, avoid it.
Yeah, I'll pour the wine, you have a jelly bean, everybody's happy. Exactly. We've all done it,
we don't have to brush our teeth or go to bed. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and then part of that is acceptance. So in the book, we're really, like, literally from the first chapter, we're saying you accepting this is the first and most important step, because if you fight it, if you deny it, if you avoid it, if, you know, you pretend it's not happening, or if you don't talk about it, it's just going to make it worse. So actually accepting it, and especially for kids who are just desperate to get their mum and dad back together.
Yeah.
You know, if I do this, maybe they'll get back together. Even though rationally they know actually life is probably better now with mum and dad separated, there's still this little fantasy that actually if I just do this, it'll get them back together. Mm. And accepting that A, you were nothing to do with the divorce, and B, you are nothing to do with getting them back together. That actually, this is between the mum and the dad, the two adults. This is their thing, and they're the ones who have to sort it out.
Yeah, and I think that was really great that you started the book talking about that, because I think that's the first... They don't want the change.
No.
They don't want the change. They don't want to go to do two different houses, sometimes three different houses. Mm-hmm. And I think that's more than anything, that they were like, but I just want to be in my one room every day of the week and all those sort of things. And then, and further down the line, I love that you've got a checklist, like, have you remembered your toothbrush? Have you got, you know, a spare pair of pants? Remember your PE kit if that's happening? Like, those sort of practical tips are really good, because I think you can go into complete denial, like, I want the parent to just sort everything out, but having a bit of ownership and a bit of
and control. You know, for kids, this thing happens to them and they have no control over it. You know, their life is upended a little bit or massively, depending on how it all goes, and they have no control over it. And so what they will try and do, not consciously, but what they'll try and do is then create control, and they'll do it through potentially you know, challenging behaviour, refusing to do things, getting a strop on, whatever it is. That's how they'll try to control. So in the book, we say, look, there are other more helpful ways of trying to get control, which is communicate clearly, and we give them a little communication plan. Take ownership of what you need and what you'd like in each house. Be very assertive, be clear to your parents, like, I do not want to get caught in the middle here. So if you've got something to ask mum, go and ask her yourself. Or if you've got something to ask dad, go and ask him yourself. So kind of giving them control in a healthy way. Because we all seek control, and we all do it, especially when we're anxious and a bit unsure.
So to start with, how, you know, what's there a kind of a best way to tell the children it's happening? Like, I hear what you're saying about you should tell them, obviously, and you should be honest with them and talk openly. Now, is that a sitting down situation? Do you do it separately? Do you do it together? Like,
well, there are some principles that you can follow. So maybe doing it out on a walk so that they don't sit on the sofa where mum and dad told us they're splitting up, you know, and that becoming a slightly triggering place for them. You could do it out on a walk. You could do it all together. That's the ideal, so that all the kids are there together, because then you don't have the who was the last one to find out issue. Why was I the last one? Doing it together, ideally in terms of the two parents together. So they're doing it as a united team. And doing it when you as parents have got just enough Oscar winning performance in you to make out it's kind of okay.
Right.
Because if you're sobbing your heart out, I don't know, the jury's still out on this whole kids watching, seeing parents emotion.
Like, right.
I've yet to meet a child who's fine with seeing their parents cry. Yeah. And it's a really tricky one. And other kind of schools have thought, oh, well, it's important for them to know how you're feeling and sort of teach them that you're sad and you're crying, but you'll be okay. So it's a tricky one. But if you can, in that information sharing moment, just be, keep the emotional tone down a little bit.
Should you say, you know, we still love each other very much and all of that, and we're friends and all that, if that's not true?
I don't think you do. I think you have to say it's not your fault. That's something you definitely need to say to kids. Even however old they are, however obvious that might seem to you, to them, because kids are very egocentric, they're going to think, what did I do that made this happen? So being very clear about that from the start. But you can talk about falling out of love.
Yeah.
That actually, you know, we still love you very much, but we don't love one another like we used to, and so we're going to separate, but we're going to still be your mum and dad, or you know, your parents, and you're still our number one concern.
And how honest should you be if there's been, for example, infidelity? Like, do you tell them that?
It's tricky. So depending on their age.
Yeah.
So we know adolescents, for example, are very black and white in their thinking. You know, that like the whole of adolescence, something's either amazing or absolutely awful. There's very little grey area. Yeah. And so if they will jump to conclusions and they will kind of take sides, really, that's their sort of natural instinct. So if there's something like an infidelity there, then they will automatically take sides, and that can disrupt that relationship with the other parent. So It's a tricky one. There's no right or wrong necessarily, but being aware of their relationship with the other parent sort of long term and how to keep that going. Because there's two main culprits in divorce. It's conflict and parental absence. They're the two, not the divorce itself. That's fine. It's those two bits that often come with a divorce that really messes children up. So if you can talk about the reason, they need a narrative, they need a story about the divorce, they need a why. So it depends how you want to play it.
Yeah.
And just own it. If you want to tell them everything, just, you know, do it and be confident and proud of that.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, from the advice I got is that you don't tell them once. It's an ongoing conversation. Yes. And so, I sat down with my children and my ex, and we told them that we were separating and they were loved, and we put a massive bowl of Skittles in the middle of the table. Very helpful. As someone messaged me the other day and said, I read your book and I'm about to tell my children I'm separating, and we got Skittles. And then she wrote to me the next week and said, the Skittles really helped. Thank you very much. So you're welcome, both divorced people and the Skittles company.
That is Skittles the sweets, to be clear. Don't get like bowling Skittles. No. That just might be confusing. Is that right? I mean, I don't want to speak for you.
There's a potential for violence.
confusing for the child.
Yeah.
You're not saying go to a bowling alley.
Wine gums.
And tell them that. Although M&M's maybe a good distraction.
Could do, yes.
Maybe between, you know, oh, so daddy had an affair. Strike! might be quite good to break up the rhythm. Yeah,
you could have like faces in the Skittles, couldn't you, of the various
people. Yes, you could. Yes.
The mistress and
this is how many women he slept with.
Yes. Try and get them all...
Done.
Exactly right.
Love it. I promised my children a kitten, and because my ex was allergic to cats, and so they went yay, and so that was great. So it was like dad's out, but we're getting a cat.
But we're getting a cat.
Yeah. You so
just,
I mean,
you just like the solution to divorce for you is things that have the assonant sound of kit in kitten skittles.
Kit cats.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can't
kitchens.
Kitchens. Yeah. So no, that's but that's good. But I think I think because it's the initial shock, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like any grief, and they are going, they're going through the process of grief, aren't they?
So
there's the shock bit and sadness. Then there's anger. Mm. Angharad. That's a good word to say after your name. So I'm much better at anger than I was. I'm still a work in progress. But how is a good way to deal with anger with your children? Because initially you kind of go, don't be angry, everything's fine. But how do you go, no, be angry for a bit. That's good.
Well, so in our second chapter of our book, we go straight in for anger because that is the one that we all struggle with our kids at the best of times. We can do sadness, we could do worry, but anger, you know, there's something must be really badly wrong with them if my kid's angry. Well, it's just another emotion, like any other emotion. And it comes from a sense of injustice. And when you think about kids where their parents are divorcing, you know, my goodness, why would they not be angry?
Mm.
You know, their whole world's, say, been slightly upended. They've got no control.
Yeah.
It feels unfair to them. So anger is an absolutely natural part of it. Mm. And so, but of course, it can be quite destructive in what we do with the anger. So we're very clear about anger being so important and absolutely fine. But what do you do about it? And, you know, the sort of the heat of anger only lasts a certain little time, doesn't it? You know, that really absolute fury. Yeah. And so if you can, we say to the kids about sort of just stepping out of the room at that point and just letting it come down a little bit before you then go back in and say what you meant to say.
Mm.
We also talk about the effect of anger on our thinking, that when we get angry, our thinking becomes very sort of wonky and we become like, I hate that one and that's always going to be awful. And actually just letting the anger go down before making decisions or before telling somebody exactly what you're thinking. But writing things down, going on a trampoline, screwing up paper, scribbling on something, you know, anything like that that gets the physical tension out is important. But then that you have a little chat about the anger, being aware that when we've been really angry, our body takes a good few hours to calm down. So you know any teacher will know it in school, kids had an outburst and then seems to calm down, and then oh my god, a break time, they've had another outburst, and after lunch they've had another outburst. So our bodies take quite a long time to calm down after, even after that kind of wave of anger's gone. So just being aware of that, otherwise the day's just going to get, you know, if someone's been angry and then an hour later you go back into their room and say, by the way, you've got to tidy this up, then they could just spark a fire.
Yeah, you're stoking the fire.
So,
can you talk us about, can you tell us about the 3-2-1 technique?
Yes.
Mm.
What you do is you get a dusty bin. Are we having to look this up in your book because you've forgotten your own book?
Was you even write this book? Three things I can see.
Yes.
Yeah. I did. I really did. I really did. I promise you.
It's a pop quiz. Yeah. It's a pop quiz. Yeah. I think
Ruth Fitzgerald did more than her share.
Sorry.
Such a fraud.
I'm just proving that I've actually read the book.
I'm such a fraud. Well, you see, I normally do it 5-4-3-2-1. That's why I kind of looked slightly blankly at you.
Okay, that's
because
fine.
Normally we do 5 things you can see, 4 things you can touch, blah 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 blah. But I think for simplicity, I was wondering why did we make it just 3-2-1? It's just a bit easy just to think
for
about
kids.
For kids. So just when you're in that heat of the moment and we talk about waves of emotions and waves pass. They really, really come and they go, and just hanging on in there in the midst of the wave. And this 3-2-1 is a really nice thing that you could do. It's kind of a grounding technique. So you look and you think of 3 things that you can see, and you literally say to yourself, I can see that, I can see that, I can see that. 2 things you can touch, you know, I can touch the table, I can touch the sofa. 1 thing you can hear, that kind of thing. And it just gets you back into your body, nicely grounded, and it just means your head is not spinning quite as much as it was.
What are the other two things then for adults? I'd imagine five things I can eat and four things I can drink. That often brings me back to my body.
That would be a very, yes.
Now, what are the other two for grown-ups?
It's tasting and smelling.
Oh, it's basically what I said.
That's all senses done.
So once the kind of the dust has settled a bit, you've established that we're separating and perhaps one of you's moved out or whatever, you know, how do you deal with the relationship then? For example, how do you deal with managing your own relationship? We all know, right, that you're not supposed to slag off the other partner in front of the kids, but what if the kid comes to you and starts slagging off the other partner? How do you manage that?
Yeah, that's tricky because ideally you want to keep that relationship going with both parents. The kid, depending on their age, won't be able to do that themselves. So a lot of parents say, oh, well, they're a teenager. They'll be able to initiate contact or they can make their own decisions. Whereas actually, you know, giving a 12, 13-year-old the decision whether they want to see dad or not anymore is like, you know, you're just impossible. It's like giving them a live firework. It's just like bad news. So I think if they're slagging off the other parent, then maybe saying to them, how come you're thinking that? And maybe they might just say, I'm just really angry with them. They've messed up our lives. And being able to, we talk about different perspectives, you know, you could be sort of different sides of the same table and have a different view about things. And that actually everyone's got their own story, their own perspective. No one perspective is right or wrong. Each one is as valid as the other. And it's just sort of accepting that. And if they're really cross with the other partner, that's fine. That's fine. And you can say, I can understand how you feel.
What if they do say, I don't want to go round there anymore, I don't want to see him or her?
That's tricky. That is really
tricky. Do you make
them
go?
Yes, unless there's safeguarding issues, really. Right. Unless there's safeguarding issues and there's some real, you know,
For a numpty, for example, me, just what is safeguarding exactly?
Well, I guess if they're going to be hit and abused and neglected and not cared for, if they did go to the house. So which is thankfully in a minority cases, but it's something that's very, you know, when you're parenting with somebody that you're not even talking to anymore, of course your thoughts will turn towards things that they're doing wrong. Oh, well, they're not doing it like me, so therefore it's wrong, or they're messing that up. So it's sort of trusting the other, like your trust will have just disappeared altogether in your partner, but you've got to kind of trust that they can still parent okay. So if your child is reluctant to go, if you can encourage, cajole them to, and if it means that they don't do an overnighter but you go and pick them up at 9 p.m. on the Saturday instead, that's fine, but just to keep that relationship going because it's very, very hard to pick up on it once, you know, 4 years have passed and they haven't seen mum or dad.
Yeah, that's hard. I was going to ask about family therapy because often people have got in touch with me and talked to me once you've you know established the new relationship, is it worth going back to kind of, you know, work on rebuilding what has been very much broken?
Sorry, my old grey's gone down the wrong way.
sorry.
I think time and affection and reliability, if you can do those three things, you'll repair it. I think if there are elephants in the room and things that just haven't quite been resolved or have been there all along that have never been resolved, then it might be that you want someone else to help you sort of unravel it.
Yeah.
But children do not enjoy family therapy.
No.
And I can say that because I do it with kids and I see their little faces. They're like, they benefit from it.
Again.
Yeah, you've got to go see that woman again and get all that filth out onto the table. So it's a tricky process. But it can be an incredibly beneficial one. But again, it kind of goes back to what we talked about, confidence of parents. Actually, I think most parents have all the skills that they need to help repair that relationship. It's just the confidence in doing it. And I say they're the three things: time, affection, and reliability. Nothing, you might get away with it.
Yeah. Do you need to get to a point where you see, like in the movies, sometimes, you know, families, you know, the parents can be friends and Christmases and birthdays together and all that. Do you
see
to
that?
Do
would
that?
Be, no, It would be lovely. It would be lovely. There was that photo, wasn't it, that went viral a few years ago. There was a, I think it was American, and you had the kid and they all had their football shirts on, and then you had stepmom and stepdad and mom and dad, and they were all together, and it was this photo of one. I thought, oh, that's lovely. I mean, of course, that would be ideal, but only because then for the child, there's no choices to be made, no loyalties to have to, you know, think about, not, they don't have to think about anything other than just being with their family. But that's very, hard to do.
Is that quite rare?
And rare, definitely.
Yeah, I know, friends who have got gone through mediation, and the mediator said to them, you know, it is rare to be friends. Like, don't feel that you haven't achieved the next level or success equals friendship. Because I think a lot of people ask about forgiveness. And I, you know, personally, I don't think I have to forgive my ex-husband to feel a sense of peace. I don't think he's owed it. But so many people go, oh, well, you've got to forgive to move on. But I don't know. I don't know. What's your professional advice?
It's a really not trendy talk, but it's one that I think everyone's starting to try and figure out, what is this forgiveness thing? And is it an important part in any healing process? But I think actually what forgiveness means to different people is different. And because it's a very subjective experience, it's very hard for us to know when I say I've forgiven somebody, that means the same thing as when you've forgiven somebody. So I think you can maybe understand why somebody's done something, or at least appreciate their viewpoint. But that doesn't mean that you've got to then say to them, that's completely fine what you did. Because that's what I think forgiveness is you saying, that's completely
cool. Yeah, great. Thanks so much for doing that thing you did to me.
And I don't think you've got to do that to move on. That's my personal sense. I think you can do it by thinking, okay, they did that. That really hurt. And right now I'm in no position to make it all okay for them.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to let it get in the way of me needing to do my job, which is basically you still need to co-parent. So I've got to have some kind of working relationship with this ex. So how can I go about doing that? And, you know, kind of related to that is parents when they've got a kid who looks just like the ex.
Oh, no.
And they're like, you know, these murderous thoughts I have towards my ex, they sometimes flick into my head when I'm looking at my 4-year-old or my 14-year-old, because they look just like them, or they just said that and it was just like them. That's tricky.
The other day my daughter asked me, what qualities did you think I inherited from both you and Dad? And I said, I'll get back to you on that. But my friends did just say, you inherited the best qualities from both of us.
Oh, that's good.
And I went, damn it. But I didn't fuck it up. I didn't go, well, no. You're excellent because of me. Because I think that's the point scoring. I think that's when you can let yourself down.
Well, and you can in the heat of the moment, can't you? And well done you for not. And I think if you do...
The things you think and the things you say are very different, Anne Harrod.
And if you do let yourself down, just go back to them the next day and say, sorry, that was completely out of order. I was just in a bit of a moment there. Actually, I've had a little think, and these are the things I think you've got from your dad.
Very punctual sometimes.
Good at maths.
Really good at maths.
He can fold a crisp packet into a triangle.
Do you know these are all remarkably important skills, aren't they?
Matching shoes, outrageous.
But what your daughter was probably saying to you was, am I still an okay person? Because I'm half dad, I'm half mum. Am I still okay? And when we slag off our ex, we're kind of slagging off half of our kids. And it's just being aware of that.
That's really it. The golden rule is, love your children more than you hate your ex.
Oh, I like that.
It's beautiful. That on a cushion.
I'll get it cross-stitched.
Get a t-shirt done. Yeah.
Now, I just wanted to quickly, when we're talking about moving forward, what happens when you get a girlfriend or a boyfriend?
What's the best way to introduce them, first of all? How long should you wait? Should there be a bit of time between the separation and the introduction, or what's...
I suppose your child is never going to be as excited about a new partner as you're going to be. Because to them, they've got mum and dad, so what, you know,
unless that new partner is like Ariana Grande or Harry Kane or someone really good, or a massive YouTuber, then you might get away with it.
You might. I've just got this image of like Ariana Grande and Harry Kane because they're about 4 foot different, aren't but yes, exactly. So unless they're really famous or have other wonderful qualities, but yes, so it's knowing that your kid is never going to be as excited about it as you are, and accepting that.
And they might not like them, right?
No,
and
you might probably won't. Yeah. However lovely they are, because they have already got two parents, so anything else is, you know, just not needed. So I reckon. Time-wise, there's, you know, there's no laws, but just let the dust settle first after the separation. And then once you've started your new relationship, give it 3 months, I would, you know, just to get really firmly established, you know.
So from the start, not since the separation, you mean from the start of the relationship.
Exactly, because those first 3 months are very important, you know, and trying to conduct a relationship when you've got kids and doing it secretly, you know, is really tricky. But I think then, because the more secure you are in that relationship, the more secure your children will be eventually. So if you're still getting to know them and you introduce them to the kids and then it all goes a bit pear-shaped, again, you're just going to be quite cross with yourself and think, oh, why didn't I wait? So I'd give it a good time just to get the relationship embedded, and then don't flirt with your partner in front of your kids. Don't sit on their knee and give them love bites, you know, while the Sunday roast is cooking. Just try and be decent about it, because your kids do not want to see you falling in love and being all giddy.
Oh, that's interesting. So don't,
Don't be amorous, because kids don't like it anyway.
Oh, no, it's gross.
Parents or adults being even vaguely sexual is just repulsive to them. Yeah. So if it's their parents with somebody new, when they're slightly brokenhearted and can never replace, for example, in their minds, mum, dad, then it's just a bit tasteless, really, in their eyes.
I think that's really good advice, because I think it's, you know, I think sometimes when you've had a bad breakup, you're very quick. You might be very quick to move on and like, oh, everything's fine. And, you know, I'm happy, and come and be happy with me. But they need so much longer. Children need so much longer time. So, oh no, I think that's good. And also I think when the kids are spending time with you, don't have your new partner there the whole time, because they sort of want that one-to-one time as well, don't they?
Definitely. And you remember what it's like when you were young and then you're going out with friends and then one of them kept bringing their boyfriend with them. You're like, oh, you know, lovely though the boyfriend is, I don't actually want to hang out with them. I want to hang out with you, my friend. And so for kids, it can very much feel like that. You know, however lovely the new partner is, they still want time. And that's often one of the upsides of divorce, is that they get better quality time with each parent, because suddenly, rather than just seeing, you know, dad from 6:30 p.m. at night time, you know, they see him for a whole weekend every couple of weeks. Actually, they can have it. It is one of the upsides. So to kind of take that away too soon can feel quite difficult.
Oh, that's blooming excellent advice.
Yeah, so what sort of proportion should you be spending? So you've got this new partner and your kids. How should you be dividing that time? How much time do kids need with you on their own, basically?
Well, it will differ according to age, but also what they do, you know. So if your time together previously to the new partner coming along has been sitting at home, I don't know, playing computer games together or baking or whatever, or if it's been going out to the beach, actually keep those things going. But then new partner can come for the dinner, for example. Or it's like when you've got little kids and you're trying to choreograph play dates. Keep them short, keep them sweet, keep them very focused, and then boom. It's better to end on a high than think, cripes, are they still here? You know, and everyone's just run out of steam. So you could start off with, I don't know if you had to put a thing like 20-80% and then slowly build up to 50-50. And
so
then
20% with the new partner.
Yeah. Slowly build, you know, up. And just about thinking about practicalities. Maybe the new partner's brilliant to, you know, they can do the lifts on the Wednesday night and that might be quite handy. So it might end up going a little bit more. So whatever sort of works, but just keep an eye out on the kids. Because I say, just because you've got your love glasses on, that doesn't necessarily mean they will.
Yeah, and then what happens if the kid's like, well, I want to spend all my time with the other parent, but they are spending all the time with the new partner? Because I guess it's quite difficult then to go to your ex and go, can you not spend so much time with your new partner, please?
Yes.
How do you manage that?
Well, ideally, in a way, you can help your child learn how to say that to their dad or their mum. You know, when I come and see you, Dad, can we make sure that we have just time, just you and I? But if not, I think as a co-parent, being able to just say, by the way, I think they're missing time with you. It's how you frame it, isn't it?
They really love you.
Exactly. They really love you.
Oh, they love their time just with you.
Just with you. So stop being such a...
Yeah. Why don't you try not being such a cunt? Yeah. Just for a Saturday afternoon. Just for Sunday afternoon.
Just for Saturday afternoon.
Just try it for a few hours. You might like it. Yeah. I mean, I know it's been 43 years, but give it a go. Give it a go, mate.
Go on.
Try new things. Try being there for your kids on their own like they want, like they're asking for. Just an idea.
Just putting it out there, putting it on the table.
Well, it's been lovely having you,
Anne. Yeah, yes. And then finally, as a more of a general sort of, because I don't know everyone listening will have children of a variety of ages, what is the best way to about rupture and repair? Because when we fuck up as parents, what's the best way to rebuild that relationship? How do you do the steps towards rebuilding it? Because I think, you know, both as the parent and, you know, wanting the co-parent to rebuild something that has had a pretty nasty knock.
Yes, between the parents, you mean?
Yeah.
Because it's a bit easier when it's with the kids, because you're the adult, so you've got to take the lead. But when it's with the ex, I think just move into a co-working frame of mind. So we've probably all worked with people in the past where it's like, cripes, I can't stand them.
Oh, God, yeah.
But
you've
got to work with them. So you figure out ways of just getting what you need to get done and without sort of engaging with too much of other stuff. So it's kind of just getting into that mindset. We've both got jobs to do. We both still need to parent these kids. I hate your guts, but I need to work with you.
Yeah.
And so to do that, I'm just going to get, you know, put your worky glasses on, put, you know, lenses that you see through and just think, right, job to do. I'll communicate information in the way that I need to. I'll take the emotion out of it all together.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. Another tip someone said is always wait 24 hours to reply to a text.
Yes.
Ooh, strong.
But, you know, sometimes you can't when you're like, oh, the kids are coming home in half an hour. But, you know, I think that's something that I've learned to take a deep breath, because you just want to reply in all caps and in a shouty way. But, but you get past that.
That's it. That's the waves, isn't it? If you send a text in the height of that wave, when you're right in that wave of emotion, chances are, even though it just feels good at the time, you're going to look back and go, oh, why did I do that?
Yeah.
And always send one text less than you mean to as well. But that's more for when you're dating, you know, rather than trying to...
Oh, that's new. Talk me through that. Yeah.
Well, so the idea being, it's not that you don't send text or you don't reply, but just always send one less than... you would like to.
I always send one more and always regret it. I go, oh, anyway, one more thing. Oh, I listened to this song the other day and I thought of you. Anyway, I'm just going to cook this for my dinner. Anyway, okay, goodbye. Let's speak soon. Kiss, kiss.
How's that working out for you?
Kiss emoji. We all know, Ellie. But yeah, just you can give too much.
You can give
too much.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And it's such a shame that it is. It's a shame that all of the world isn't just kind of geared up to people just generously giving their love and their time and all. But sadly, it's not. Humans are complicated and things are twisted. So just hold a little bit back.
All right, I'll write that up. I'm going to write that on my hand in Sharpie. Maybe.
I'll just throw my
phone in the bin for a bit.
I did have to say to my husband many years ago, you don't have to send the last, like, you don't have to reply to every message in a conversation. Yeah. The people he was, like, friends, I'd be like, you still do it.
Pete and I have been texting for the last 7 years, the same conversation.
This is it.
Pete and I are exactly the same person, almost.
You can let the conversation stop at what the other person says.
It makes me edgy. I'm like, okay, bye, kiss.
Yeah.
Double kiss.
I regularly don't reply to people, and then my parents ring me up and go, did you get the text message I sent you 28 minutes ago? And I'll go, yes, but I'm doing other things with my life.
Yeah, I mean, of all the people not to reply to, maybe your parents aren't the, you know, just send them one text more. Mate, that would be
I would never get anything done. And love them, but yeah.
I think we've solved so many problems.
We have.
Anne Harrod, you're a fucking wonder.
She actually is an experienced and intelligent
20 years. She's learned something.
Who knew?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Shall we end, as always, as is tradition, with a Scummy Mummy confession?
I think we should. Can I start?
Please do.
Quite recent. Last night, Ellie and I were doing our Edinburgh preview show. We've got a show on in Edinburgh in August, by the way. We'll plug that later. But while I was on stage, my son sent me this text message going, "Hello, it's the police. The cat Tigger has been sick all over the bed and all over the floor. You have to come home. I think we need to take him to the vet." Okay, bye, Mum. So I was thinking, oh, well, they've got a babysitter. There's two of them. So I thought, oh, I'll stay for another drink after the show. I'll avoid it. And then I came home and then I had to like step over all of the cat sick. And then two kids were asleep in bed. And by that stage, the babysitter, I prayed her generously, had gone. But no one had done anything about the cat sick. It was so gross. And the cat was asleep. Hugo had pulled out the under, you know, the drawer under the bed. So all the fresh sheets, the cat was sleeping on the drawer of fresh sheets. Hugo was in my bed. Matilda was in hers. And I was like, this is fucking disgusting. So I cleaned up cat sick. And then by the time I got to sleep, it was about 12:30 at night. I was like, gross. I think I'm going to have them sacked. I need to replace them. All
the children.
Them.
Well, the cat. Or the,
all of them.
Yeah, everything. Yeah.
The yes. house, the flooring. Burn it down.
Everything.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Start I've again. Had enough of that. Yeah.
Just start
I love
again.
Them, yeah. really. But at
I think
that moment,
you should go home, get a bowl of Skittles and tell your children you're separating from them. That's what I think you should do. And they're taking, and they have to take the kittens with them this
time. Maybe the cat ate the Skittles. Anyway, so that's my Scummy Mummy confession. It's fucking cat sick. It's not the first time I've mentioned it. Cats are great, though, but not
crusty cats.
Gross. No, oh, no. Vile.
Angharad, do you have a Scummy Mummy confession?
Well, sort of-ish, in that my daughter got her braces off yesterday, so she's had them for 21 months, finally taken them all off. So we left the orthodontist. I guess it was a lesson to me on things mattering more to me than they do to her. So I was really excited for her, really excited. And I was particularly excited because her teeth had been so crooked that we'd got them all in the NHS, so I hadn't had to pay a penny. So I was congratulating myself and her as we got into the car. And I drove straight into a bollard.
Oh, darling.
So the £4,000 that I'd saved.
Oh, you're joking.
On the
oh,
I mean,
God.
I've got a really battered car, so it'll only be, whoa. I don't know. But I just thought, that will teach me. Because she was just taking it all in a stride. Braces were off. She kind of quite liked them and sort of feels a little bit naked without them.
I
ignored
really
all that.
I missed them.
And yeah. I was like, yeah, brilliant, we've done this. Brilliant. Tick it off, smash.
Oh,
and she
mate.
Just looked up from Snapchat and just gave me one look and then went straight back into her phone, which then made me more furious because I thought, it's actually your fault that I've smashed into this bollard. I managed to not say that, but I was thinking it in my head. And then I thought, bless her heart, this is actually nothing to do with her. It's just me as a mum with my weird ideas about things.
Oh, I think Ellie crashes her car when she gets her braces off. She'll be giddy as a kid.
Probably, yeah.
And it was one of those bollards just below the wind, you know, like
and it just crunches.
And then I had to
kind
of reverse out of the bollard.
Oh, no.
So just doubled the impact, really. Anyway.
Oh, mate.
That
You have
that taught me, didn't it?
Yes, you have my full sympathy. But you know what, Ann Harrod? Don't beat yourself up about it.
Thank you.
Physician, heal thyself.
I'll eat some Skittles. Yeah. All would be well.
Yeah, fuck it. It's just a machine. You should see my car. It's like a fucking bin.
I think we should share the winning confession from last night, Ellie.
Oh, yes, please do.
Oh, my God. So this woman said that she had gone out to Magic Mike approximately 6 months after having her baby. She had had a triple prolapse. And she got a bit excited, had about many drinks. And one of the naked Magic Mike men picked her up and swung her around. And I'm not going to paint a prettier picture than it is.
Tell her truth, speak her truth.
She weed all over him.
Oh, no.
She weed all over the Magic Mike.
But she said that he was so sweaty, she doesn't think he noticed. Like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, like a sprinkler. Yeah.
Or maybe he liked it.
I don't know.
We've all seen the internet. There's a market for it.
I mean, there's a lid for every pot. yeah, so that was the winning confession last night.
Oh, my goodness.
It was quite... we've had before, was it, Ellie?
Well, you've had that before, because I've weed on you before during a dance routine. But yeah, that's a story for another time.
Yeah, I picked Ellie up and I popped her on her shoulder.
Naked?
No, we were both wearing white Diamante catsuits.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Which we've actually washed recently. I'm going to wear
to
the wedding.
I had to wash them in my bath, yeah.
Well, we could recreate the moment at the wedding as a nice little gift.
But this time I will have a wee before we do the
and I'll try not to make my shower... my shoulder so bony. What lovely stories we've all given.
Oh.
Sick, wee... car crashes. I mean, all
let
the
us
hits.
Plug the book one more time. So yes, Split Survival Kit: 10 Steps for Coping with Your Parents' Separation. So it's a book. It's aimed at kids, isn't it?
It's aimed at kids, but I think parents can learn a lot.
Yeah, there was loads of shit in here that I was like, oh yeah, oh that's good. Maybe I should get divorced. This makes it much easier.
Oh,
it's
absolutely
much more feasible.
Now you've also written a couple of other books. Do you want to tell the listener about those while you're
here?
Well,
the one I was here to talk about with you a couple of years ago was Find Your Girl Squad, and that was all about girl friendships and bullying and sort of dealing with that. And then I've also written with Tanith Carey two books, What's My Child Thinking and What's My Teenager Thinking, and that's for parents.
Can you do What's My
Husband
Thinking?
What's My Boss Thinking? Yeah. What's My Ex Thinking?
What am I thinking? That's what I need.
Yeah, what am I thinking?
You need What's My Cat Thinking?
Oh, my God.
If it's thinking I'm going to be sick, you can close the drawer.
What's he thinking? That's what I need. I might be get a boyfriend. I think these books are absolutely excellent because, I mean, we even make light of this in our show. Going into the teen years, you feel like you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, my goodness, you don't.
And teenagers
I wouldn't go back.
Changing.
I wouldn't go back really, to being a teenager. Would you?
No. Not at all. No, it's too hard.
No.
And all the things that they have to face.
But you know, adolescence goes on till you're about 24. So I was thinking about when you met your ex. You were 22.
No, I was 19.
You were 19.
I was with him 22.
You were still a kid.
Yeah, I was underdeveloped in some areas.
You know, but when you think about it, you know, meeting someone in your early 20s, you're still not fully formed. So. It's going to be difficult to, you know.
Yeah. Well, as my mother always says, in the olden days, when marriage was invented, you got married when you were 11, but you were dead at 35. So it was a different institution.
Yeah, quite set in, had it, which is about 20 years of marriage. But yeah, so teenagers, tricky.
Yeah.
Just hang on in there.
All your books.
Excellent. Well, quick bit of admin. We are going to Edinburgh from the 18th to the 27th of August. Tickets on sale now from the Underbelly website, or if you go to scummymummies.com, you can find tickets there for Edinburgh and indeed for all of our shows, Helen.
Up and down the country. Very much looking forward to going back to Leamington Spa, Ellie.
Oh, yes, that's going to be good. We've got Trowbridge. We're going wherever that is, however you say that, in October. Mm. We're going Nottingham, we're going.
Yes, that's a lovely one. And Dorking.
Yes.
That's a big old venue. Come to that one then, please.
Yeah. And we have still got more dates that we're going to put up this year. We're just finalising the, you know, boring old admin and contracts and all that. But yes, do keep an eye if you want to come and see our show.
Excellent. Marvellous. Oh, and my paperback is out at the end of July. So my book, but a cheaper version of it. A softer version, one might say. Lighter version. Ellie's chapter obviously...
It is still in it, yes.
Very, very, very good.
They moved it to the front, actually. Yeah.
To entice
the reader in the bookshop.
Yeah, yes.
Do stuff bookshops, are they still a thing? Who knows?
No one knows. They're gone like the libraries. Yeah.
But yes, get divorced, be happy. Excellent. In fact, if you are thinking about getting divorced, why not Give yourself a bundle.
Get a bundle.
Be happy. Paperback split survival kit for the kids. Yeah. There you are. Job is good. Summer holidays done.
Shining. That would be a good idea. Excellent. Well, I would like to talk to you longer, but Ellie has to go and get an MAT done on her car.
I'm actually going to see a lawyer about getting divorced. This book's really broadened my mind.
It's a gateway book.
Thank you so much, Ang Harrod, for coming on the podcast again. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Yay. You really... Brilliant.
Excellent. 10 out of 10.
It's great, isn't it, having someone who knows shit. It's really good.
God. No heavy lifting for this one.
Yeah. Do you want to move in?
Yes, please. Especially in the new kitchen.
Lovely kitchen.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.